I would now like to introduce our speaker. What's your name? John?
Hi, friends. I'm John. I'm an alcoholic. Come on here.
Just twist it and bring it up there.
Okay, we'll bring it up. I know my voice is normally pretty loud, but let me just move that. Okay, well, welcome if you're new or nearly new in this AA program and you're on this new journey. Welcome. Tonight, what I'd like to share is just basically what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And kind of going back, I found out a lot of things as I was growing up, and a lot of them weren't true. A lot of the things, like in life, certain things happened to me, you know, and I found that, like just for an example, the things that were going on was my mom. She drank herself to death by the time she was 29. But I didn't know it was alcohol. You know, I remember the yelling and the screaming and the throwing the bottle, you know, the stuff out of the bedroom. I remember when I was a young boy, I was really scared to go to kindergarten. They had this slide, and the other kids talked about this slide, and I was kind of just a weak little kid. I didn't know I was weak, but that slide scared me. And my mom took me down to the school. I remember that day that we went, you know, and I looked in, you know, I got to peek in the window and look at this slide, you know, and it's about this tall, right, you know, but to me it was like huge. I didn't like heights and I didn't know about a slide. I'd never been on a slide before, but I was so scared of it, and she kind of helped me through that. But so I was really a mom's boy, right? And then when she died when I was about 9, that gave me this story. A little poor me story, right? You know, because I made it all about me. And I had a lot of problems with that. You know, I had to see a lot of psychiatrists and stuff when she died, because I was really attached to her. Anyways, we were in Newfoundland at the time, and we came back to America, and we're back in Tacoma, and you know, I'm like 9 years old, just turned 9, and you know, we did that Christmas with, you know, she died right before Christmas, and so there was no Christmas, you know, that kind of deal. And so there was another little poor me story, right? And you know, and I just didn't feel right. And then my daddy threw this party, and it was a kegger. And here I am 9, and I'm the bartender. I was okay. When I got that alcohol, I was okay. You know, and I'm passed out drunk, and I'm a 9-year-old kid, right? You know, and everybody's, ha, 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 that's really funny, right? I didn't understand how sick that really was, right, for a kid. But I found the answer to my problems, and it worked. I was okay. I was absolutely okay. I tried drinking, you know, once you find alcohol, you know, I tried drinking like one or two. It drove me absolutely nuts. Absolutely nuts to just have one or two. I had to have more. Always had to. So I always stockpiled. I stockpiled alcohol. I found out who drank in the neighborhood. And, you know, and back then people left their doors open. You know, I knew who, when they went to church, when they went to work. I just go in. Sometimes I sit down at their table and drink their beer. You know, I mean, it was crazy the things that I would do. And I remember, like, even smoking cigarettes. My mom smoked a lot too, and I remember sitting at the end of the house smoking a cigarette, and these people, you know, they're driving by shaking their finger at me, and I go, what's the matter with you guys? You know, I'm like 9, 10 years old, right? You know, and at the time, you know, what's the matter with you guys, right? You know, I'm just having a smoke, you know, but I didn't realize how off the wall that was, you know, that there was a problem in that. And And anyways, you know, as I'm going, I get all of these, you know, we moved around a lot. You know, my father's been married 10 times, so you have an idea. He just got married for the 10th time. So, you know, there was a lot of moves in the middle of the night. There's a lot of parties. There's a lot of alcohol. There's naked women running around in the house, you know. There's us 5 kids, and we're moving on the weekends, you know. There's You know, I go to my father, like, with the problem, here, drink a beer, you know, and then I go to my brother, right, you know, my older brother, you know, and he'd say, ah, smoke a joint, you know, that kind of stuff. That was the kind of the mentoring that I got. Now, see, these are all little sad little stories, right? Okay, and it's really a good excuse to drink, right? So, you know, I'm in junior high. Well, actually, I was in sixth grade, and that was the first time I heard about AA. The school nurse, because I smelled like alcohol. Sixth graders don't smell like alcohol, you know. And so I got called into the nurses. Oh yeah, I just maybe spilled some beer on something, you know. I said, oh okay, but she told me about AA, and then I learned about it in junior high. I learned about it in the military. They all told me about AA, and I was just, no. But in, you know, in junior high, I was this really quiet kid. Nothing, you know, I was just scared of everything. And, you know, finally one day, I went, man, scared little kids don't have any fun. So I really jumped out of that box, and I got into what's called the parking lot crew. Right? As we moved from place to place, that was the easiest one to get in. You just have to have cigarettes and access to alcohol and drugs. Very easy to get into. And, you know, and then we were the tough guys. This is what I thought. We were tough, right? I didn't find out till later that we were the idiots. We were absolutely the idiots. The kid who got up early and delivered the newspapers and took care of his brother and sister and got them off to school. And, you know, those guys were the ones with cojones, right? You know, those were the tough guys. And, you know, being this scared little kid, my father, he taught us, you know, to be tough. He wanted us to be tough. So he was a fighter. He always fought. You know, he was always fighting. You look at I remember I took a kid to a baseball game, and the guy goes, well, which one's your dad? You know, my dad's the one with the garbage can beating on the guy in the corner. That's my dad, you know. Yay, you know, that's my dad, right? You know, and, you know, cause he taught us to be tough. And, you know, if somebody looks like they're going to start something, you just clean their clock right away. You don't give them a chance to do anything. You go. And that caused me a lot of problems. I was in a lot of fights. A lot of fights. You know, sixth, seventh, eighth grade. And see, that didn't serve me very well because I was always in trouble. And I was one of those kids, an at-risk kid. So when I was in seventh grade, they take a whole bus of us down and they take you down to the prison, you know, because, you know, they know where I'm going, you know, with everything that I'm doing. They take us down and I look at these guys in prison and I go, holy cow, I don't want no part of this. Ah, I got the idea, right? I'll have other people buy my drugs. Right? I'll give them a little, but I'm always safe. If I'm too drunk to drive, I get somebody else to drive. You know, I'll hitch a ride, stuff like that. And that actually worked out very well for me. You know, I was able to do that. And things that happened. Lies. One of the other big lies was after my mom died, I was really excited. Normally, nobody was ever home when I got home from school, and I saw my dad, and I was so excited, and I jumped up on his lap, and I gave him a big old kiss on the cheek, you know, and he throws me off his lap, and he says, we don't do that, you know, and I went, what? You know, I was so crushed, and I hate you, Dad. That was a lie. I never knew that was a lie, but from that point on, I hated my father. I looked at him with these glasses that no matter what he did, I look for the bad, the wrong, you know, how I could belittle him to make myself feel better, right? I didn't learn till way after in the program that what that lie was doing to me. And the truth was, I loved my father. I absolutely loved him. And that just crushed me, you know, as that kid, right? But that was a story I made up. And then the alcohol and the drugs, all these sad little stories, right? They start adding up, right? My dad would take us out fishing, right? And for example, right, we'd be out fishing. We'd have to stay out on this boat all day long, right? And that was my sad little story. And then when I ended up in a psycho ward, this guy, you know, we're doing the reality check on stuff, and he goes, well, let's think about this. You got five kids in a boat on a Saturday. Could it possibly be that your father was just trying to have a kid's day? Have you ever tried five little kids in a boat on your Saturday? How much fishing do you think he got done? And, you know, that was one of the, you know, where you learn new things, you know, about what's really going on. And anyways, you know, I need to go back a little bit, but so I'm in high school and just barely making it, you know, just barely sliding through, you know, junior high, high school. Moving to all these times, I was always in remedial reading. That was, you know, as soon as I come, they say, oh, the last school you were at, you were in the remedial reading, so we'll put you back in the same thing. You know, I did these little color things forever, right? You know, and so I was dumb, right? I went with the dumb kids, right? And that's how I thought about myself. When I was young, my mother died at 29, so I made up this story that I would be dead before I was 25. I don't know where that ever came from. It was just a fleeting thought in my head. Something happened, I made up this story, and then I acted like that story was true. And I didn't understand what I was doing because I was living like I would die by the time I was 25. That was the ingredients. I put all of the ingredients in my life to actually do that. And as time goes on, I'm in the military, you know, and I just went, well, see, I'm like 12 years old, right? And just to show you how naive I was, the first time I'd ever smoked pot, I didn't know what pot was, right? When I first drank, I didn't even know what alcohol was. You know, I just, you know, when I found it, that was it. And then I found pot, but I didn't know it was pot. I could go, what's the seeds in it? My brother says, oh, it just fell on the ground. We were rolling our own cigarettes around camping, right? And I went right out, you know? But anyways, to get through high school, the parking lot crew, a lot of trouble, just barely making it, drunker than a skunk. I fall down over the graduation thing. I have no idea how I graduated, but you know how you walk across the stage? I just fell in front of everybody. But the neat part was about it was, you know, I'd been in an argument with my father the night before, and he wasn't coming to my graduation. And he didn't, you know, and it was okay. I'd been drinking all night and all that day, and you know, but I graduated, you know. And anyway, so I go into military, right? And, you know, my life's pretty unmanageable. I don't know it's unmanageable, and so I make a promise to myself. But, hey, I'm going to go into military, going to be a man, I'm going to put the drugs down, and we're not going to smoke any more heroin, nothing, none of that stuff, just going to drink beer, right? Wow, they got good drugs in the Army. You know, I started off with alcohol, that gave me what I call impaired judgment, and then the next thing you know, impaired judgment leads me down this road. It leads me down the road to doing things that I normally would never do. And see, these are the things that happen. It's kind of the cycle. It's kind of the drunkologue, going towards the you know, the end of my drinking career. This is in 78 and 79. With all the ingredients that I put in my life, I was going nowhere but mental institutions. I was ending up in treatment centers. I went to this one treatment center, and hey, I can do this, right? And I sent. It was a 30-day program. 29 days I stayed at that program, right? And hey, I'm cured, the 30th day, right? Girls pick me up, because we're going dancing, right? We're going dancing. They picked me up. My feet didn't even go from the treatment center to the bar parking lot to the bar. I go, bring me a Coke. Bring me a beer. You know, just like that. And next thing you know, I'm on. And I couldn't understand why. What happened? How did I forget? And I went through that one like three different times, that same treatment center. And I went to go the fourth time, right? And the lady that ran it, she come walking out. She saw me walking up the steps, right? I'm in tears. I got no idea what to do. And she goes, John, you can't come here. I go, why? No, I got money. I can do this. No, I can do it. No. She said, you're unconstitutionally incapable of being honest with yourself or anybody else. And it just crushed me. Absolutely crushed me. You know? But the thing was, she was right. She couldn't help me. I had to go down a little bit farther. I ended up in the Davis County Mental Health. That was a little 30-day lockdown thing. Spent some time there. And just a little while later, I ended up in a psycho ward. You know, and this whole time I'm going to AA, right? Don't get me wrong, I'm going to AA. I'm trying to get this thing. I'm absolutely trying. There's a key word, trying. Trying. Trying to get this thing, right? And I end up in a psycho ward. And it was kind of strange because I was OD'd, and I'm on this, you know, in the emergency room, how they give you this stuff that undoes what you just did, right? And I had a couple $100 more worth of coke in my pocket, and I had this paranoia thing going on, and so I did the last, you know, I got off the gurney, got into the bathroom, did my last 200 bucks, right? And of course, you know, I'm real violent, and so, you know, they're strapping me down. And, you know, and I didn't know what was going on. I just knew, I knew something's wrong here. And I look, and I'm on this little gurney, and they're sending me through the psych unit. And there's this really cute girl over there, right? She's sitting here banging her head on the table. And I look at her, and I go, man, you're screwed, right? And then I look down at me, laying on this gurney, strapped down. I go, oh, you're in here with her. Whoa. It's time to pay attention, John. It's time to pay attention. And that was one of the things, you know, the little big wake-up calls. And then there was this lady, scared the crud out of me. I remember her in my face yelling, take your meds, you'll never get out of here. Just take your meds, you know, because I was fighting taking these meds they were trying to give me. And you know how you don't pay any attention to anything, right? I had no idea I was in withdrawal. I had no idea. I didn't know what all of this was going on, you know, but I weighed 135 pounds, and I'm 6'4", and I weigh about 220 now. So I was pretty, but I was one bad dude. I thought I was real bad, right? Had the long hair, black leather jacket, the chains, the boots, you know, really bad, you know. All anybody had to do is go, you know, to blow me over, right? It's my delusions of grandeur and the delusions that I had of reality, I wasn't even in it. And I didn't know it was because of all of the things, the ingredients that I was putting in my life, the alcohol, the impaired judgment. You know, I didn't have any assets, stuff like that. But anyway, so I'm in this AA meeting, and I look around, and I go, you know, I'm asking this God guy that I don't understand, you know. And basically what I got was, John, you need to pay attention. You need to see what are the key ingredients these guys are putting in their lives that are putting together time. What is it? What are they doing? And I really sat down, and because when they would say that, I always sat at the door with, you know, so I could get right out. As soon as they brought up that God guy, right, I was out that door. I've always had a tough time with this God guy. And so what I had to do was, I go, well, these guys are doing an actual program. They're actually doing, they're not trying. There's some words that they're not using. Some of the words are if, I thought, I could, I should have. I didn't know that these were spinner words for me. This is when I use those words, if I thought, I could, I should have, I would have, right? See, that's all in the past. Nothing's in the present. And it's way off into the future. Those were crippling to me. I had no idea what that was doing. But through this program, by stopping, paying attention, listening, and I know it sounds crazy, but let me, I got a sponsor. I know. I got a sponsor. I stole my first AA book. I know. It said something on the side of something meeting, I don't know, you know, so I couldn't carry the book with me anywhere, so I just tore pages out and put it in my pocket, right? Well, every time I sat down, right, you know, and you're going to sit down every day, I read a couple of pages, and you just keep reading them, and you get a sponsor, and the sponsor shows you stuff, right? And he shows you how to get down this river of denial. And my sponsor, Dave A., he had so much patience with me. He really did, because I would be, I can't. You know how it is when you're new, right? Everything's too tough, you know? Go on a journey of steps, I can't do it. So he takes me over to old folks' home, and he goes, he tells me to go in, and he says, go read to some old people. You know, I'm like 25 years old, and I'm just a young buck, right? I go in, and, you know, because I want to try to get this thing, right? And so I go in, and I found this person to talk to, and, you know, we just talked about, you know, me, I can't, and I got it. The lady with the towel wrapped around her sitting in the chair, now she can't. I can. I got that. He really taught me that. You know, whether you say you can or you say you can't, you're right. I got that. He taught me all about that principle for success. And, you know, I'm forever grateful to that man for, you know, some of the things that he did. It was just amazing. He taught me, you know, that putting new ingredients in my life, I'm going to get a different result. You've got to get a different result. It's just, it's like physics. You know, like, say, for example, if you want a chocolate cake and, you know, you put the ingredients in, at the end, you know, the proper amount, you bake it for the right amount of time and stuff, you're going to have a chocolate cake. The life that I was making, you know, just like in a cake, I had no other way my life would go other than mental institutions or death. That's it. So I had to change the ingredients. And so one was finally admitting my life is out of control. It's just absolutely out of control. Step number one, he showed me the steps. I had to realize that the party was over for John. That party's over. Because one of the things that happened with me, I would go to start this party, like in September, and then, you know, after New Year's, where'd everybody go? Why wasn't anybody there on Christmas? You know, nobody was there Christmas Day. It was just me and that old guy down at the end of it. You know, I'm 25 years old and I'm hung out in this bar. But anyway, to make a long story short, we went on a journey of these steps. One, my life is out of control. That had to be smashed. The answer is zero. For me, alcohol and drugs. You know, I had to have the answer before it came up. Because one of the problems I was having when I'd get out of treatment and I'd go out into the world, I didn't have the answer ahead of time. And somebody would say, you want a beer? Yeah, because at that time I couldn't think of the right answer to come up with. Right? And so it was kind of like Well, my sponsor told me, you know, he taught me how to have the answer ahead of time. He says, your hand doesn't go up. People pull drugs out into the room. You just quietly just turn around and walk away. Then you go away. You leave. Now, there's no ifs, ands, or buts. You have that answer ahead of time. And that was huge. That was huge. It was like, yeah, okay. And step one, my life's out of control. The answer is zero. You know, my alcoholic mind, you know, it's like one times zero is zero. A million times zero is zero. My alcoholic mind says a million times zero is two. You know, it's got to be two. No, it's not. You know, it's zero. So the answer is zero. My life's not over. I thought my life was over. My 25th birthday comes and I live to 25 years in one day. And I go, I kind of sat awake for that when I went, I thought for sure I was going to die. And then I go, oh, no, yeah, I just made that up. But so anyways, so I weigh 135 pounds. I'm on this journey. I'm starting to eat three meals a day, you know, like normal people. I find out, like, for example, on reading. I was in the military, so I got the military benefits. They asked me to leave the military. I forgot about that part. After 2 years. It was alcohol and drug related. But they asked me to leave. I got a nice honorable discharge, which is nice. It was either... Well, I had connections, okay? So the company clerk is who I bought my alcohol and my drugs from, right? Well, he was the one that did the P test, right? So, and he never used drugs. And he was the most trusted guy. He was the one that did it. So we just walk in together, he'd pee, I'd pay him, you know, and away we go. I always come out clean. But, you know, like the company commander, he kept going, well, you know, I'll give you this expeditious discharge. So anyways, I'm out of the military, right? I'm home, but I got this GI Bill. Okay, so I can go to school. So I go see the counselor lady, right? And, I'm thinking I'm really stupid because that's basically what people have told me. That's what I heard them say. This is what things that I heard my father say was, I was stupid. I'll never amount to anything. Whether he said them or not, that's what I heard. I don't know if you guys can relate to that. You know, once you put the glasses on somebody, no matter whatever they do, you pick out the part you want to hear. And when you're a victim, you want to hear more of it. Oh yeah, there's some more evidence. There's some more evidence. And you just pile it on, right? And so I was really good at that. But anyways, back to where was I? Oh, military got out. College. Right? And I go to college and, I'm going, I really can't do a real college. I'll just go to business college. So I went to a business college. Well, I'm getting all straight A's, right? And I go, hey, wait a minute. Maybe I can go to regular college. Nah, you can't do that. Okay, let me just see, right? So I went over there and I went to the guidance counselor and she had me do an IQ test, right? And I go, it's going to be really low, you know? So anyways, take the test and we're done. She goes, well, what do you want to be? And I said, well, what can I be? You know, I really said, what could I be? She said, well, anything. And I, anything? What do you mean anything? You know? And she said, no, you could be anything. And I went, nah. And she said, yeah, you're tested in the genius level. You could do whatever you want to do, you know? And I went, whoa, me? Me? You know, and it was like, I put that to the test. And I said, my first semester in college, right, I took speed reading. Okay? Yeah, that's true. Let's see. I was number one in the class, 10,000 words a minute, 95% comprehension, because I learned how to actually read. I didn't know you weren't supposed to be mouthing it in your mind. That part I never heard. So I could never read faster than I could talk in my mind. But your mind will actually just let you flow down the pages. But that's when my vision was, I can't do that anymore. But that was amazing. There was something happened, and I was able to make up a new story that I could do whatever it was I wanted. And so the new story I made up was, I'm going to be, a sewer and drain cleaner, and the best sewer and drain cleaner I could be. Because I saw this show and this guy, what did he do? He did garbage. He made gazillions of dollars in garbage, right? And of course, right, being the best sewer and drain, the best Roto-Rooter guy I could be. I worked for a little company and then 6 months later I own my own. And next thing you know, I'm in 4 states and I'm running all of this business going, and I'm sober, right? I'm working this program, things are going, things are clicking, I got this money flying, I'm flying first class, da-da-da-da-da-da, right? And then, I quit going to meetings. Okay? Yeah, you know what that means. Quit talking to my sponsor. Yeah, my little forgetter gets in there, right? And I go to the dentist. And this is all premeditated. And I had about 5 years of sobriety after going in and out, in and out, in and out. Okay, and this is just a short period of time, about 6 months. Quit going to meetings, wasn't doing anything with my home group, all that kind of stuff. I go to the dentist because I wanted the gas. I didn't understand that I was craving that impaired judgment, because I didn't understand ego and self-esteem, exactly what was going on. And I had no clue of what was going on. But my ego was huge. Whoops, excuse me. Because you got money, right? But my self-esteem is really low because all my friends I have to pay. I got these employees, right? I really don't have a friend. I have employees. And they're all friendly to you, right? Okay, and so, anyways, go to the dentist, and he gives me the script of Tylenol 3 with codeine, which has an opiate in it, which triggered the next thing I grabbed my brother, You know, and I'm living in Utah, and we fly to Denver, right? And I got a small family at the time, right? And fly to Utah, and or I fly to Colorado, right? And then I'm just pounding them down, just pounding them, and I couldn't get enough. And then the bars closed. Oh my God. I sat at the edge of that bed and shook and shook and shook because I did not have enough. And I went, what the hell is this? I've been clean almost 5 years. And I said, oh, I've heard this over and over and over. Get your ass to a meeting. Next day I went to a meeting. That was 6/26 to 85. Right? That was a long time ago. But that day, I'll never forget that day. That night, I needed that night. I needed that wake-up call. But anyways, in this program, there are certain things that happen as you're doing these steps. You know, step one, your life is out of control, right? Then we go to step two. Let me get my notes out, because I wanted to go through a couple of those things. Came to believe, this God guy, the part that was really hard for me. He's always been hard, till recently, even after all of these years. When I was in treatment, I was looking for this God guy, so I would go, I kept going, I go to the Presbyterians, the Lutherans, the Methodists. No, well, he's got to be somewhere there, right? No, he does. I mean, these other guys are having success, and they're finding him somewhere there. So I went to Mormons, I went to Catholic, you know, just everybody, right? Trying to find it, right? And then I made a decision to turn, you know, I needed some kind of a power greater than me, right? And that was a little itty bitty tiny line of cocaine. I used that to start with. That was it. That was the best I could come up with. And then it was the group of drunks, the people in the room. And then over time, I found the God guy in you. To me, the God guy that I understand is in each and every one of you people. God doesn't come and talk to me. He talks to me through you guys. Seriously. I didn't know that. But when you pay attention and you turn the radio on, and you pay attention, yes, he does talk to me that way. And, you know, I've learned a lot about this God guy. You know, my understanding of the God guy was really, really confusing. You know, the punishing, all of that kind of stuff, right? And sin and stuff like that. I didn't understand what sin was. I found out what sin is. Sin is only, you know, I thought it was like, you know, you're just doing all these wrong things, right? No, it's whatever you do against yourself. That's a sin. And what father would want to watch their son or daughter hurt themselves? That's why it's a sin. That's why it's wise not to do this. And this God guy that I have an understanding of, he looks at it, you know, as I see it, right? He won't come into a heroin den and pull me out. I got to stay there by myself. He doesn't come in there. But as soon as I reach up, he'll grab my hand and he will help me. As soon as I reach out to you guys, you will help me. Guaranteed. You know, there's been times in my sobriety when I've reached out and my God, I can't tell you how many hands, you know, like just maybe 5 years ago, 4 years ago, I was in a dark space. All of a sudden, you know, just my world starts closing in. Just like this, it's getting darker and darker. And you guys know what this, you know what this is like. There's no choices. There's no choices. No choices. Right? And I went to a meeting and I told them, you know, I just stood up in the meeting and said, I need some help. You know, I got no choices. I'm not grateful for nothing. Right? You know, I'm in deep shit. And they go, well, it's on, you know, somebody said it was on page 99 in the 12x12. And I went, what? You go read that. And I went, oh yeah, do something basically for somebody else. Okay, yeah, kind of get out there. Okay, and then all of a sudden, boom. Now I can see, you know, then you can see clearly again. That's what the God guy does. That's the step two. But I had to become willing to go on that journey. And I wasn't very willing. It was funny, I've told in some of the groups that I've been to, I talked about this guy. I was in this meeting and this guy could barely stand up. He was, you know, we're in the smoke-filled room, you know, it's all smoky, and this guy over in the corner, right? And he's kind of stands up, and he's kind of, you know, he's all crippled up, and he says, you know, I got this pride thing about this God guy, you know, this is just, you know, kind of going off, and he's telling me, well, he wasn't telling me, he was just, you know, telling his story, but he was talking about how prideful he was, and it was hard for him to get humble, right? And he talked about being humble is not less than, but just equal to. And he talked about being right-sized and how the AA program got him right-sized. Right? To be, you know, just right-sized. Not more, not less. Not any of the delusional fantasy type stuff. That we're just equal. We're just, whether you got one day or 100 days or 1,000 days or 10,000 days, it doesn't matter. We're all exactly equal. We're just equal human beings. That's what humility is. That's what it is to be humble. And I went, wow. But anyways, he's talking, and what he did was, you know, to understand this God guy, he put his shoes underneath his bed. And while he was down, he just said a couple of words. He didn't understand anything, you know, about why he was doing that. But he did that, you know, day after. And then at night, he would do the same thing with his shoes, put them under the bed, and then in the morning. And he would just say something. And he talked about fine-tuning a radio. So if you never turn the radio on, you can't hear the music. And what had happened in that, he was able to see more clearly what was going on. You know, he was able to see the miracles in his life and the different things. And I bought into that. You know, I said, hell, if he can do it, I can do this, right? I did that for 10 years. 10 years. And that's how you get to find out where the God guy is. And I didn't even realize till lately, I had a really beautiful girl tell me where he really is. He's in me too. Wow. Yeah, he's in me. And he's in you, and you, and you, and you, and you. Yeah, he's in all of us. And I go, wow. Wow. He's not in the church. he's not under a table. He's in everybody here. And that story I like. Something happened. I made up a story. But I didn't see the guy for 20 years, right? And I was having a tough time in my program at the time he told me that. And, you know, I figured that guy can do it, I can too. And anyways, I see this guy at a men's camp up the canyon. It's where men go to get sober in Utah. They have this little camp that's, you know, it's about 25, 30 miles up into the mountains. There's really no way out, you know? I mean, you just live there, it's like $40 a week, you know, and you work and you do that kind of stuff. Anyways, so I'm at this meeting because we go up on Fridays, you know, and there was a guy there, and I look over, and it's that guy that was all crippled up. And this is like 20 years later, and I just burst out crying. I said, you do not know what you said to me that day. You know, you touched me like crazy, and, you know, and I thank him for showing me where it was at, where this guy was even at, right? And he said, I go, how the hell you been? And he says, I've been out for 20 years. I said, well, thanks for, you know, spreading that to me before you went, you know? Like, I was just so grateful, and I cried for an hour, man, because that meant so much to me, that guy and what he said. And that was the God guy coming. He was coming that day, you know, to help me out in that time of the problem that I was having. And that was just amazing, you know, for him to show up like that. See, I've seen all sorts of different miracles like that in this program. I've watched, oh my God, there's so many people that, you know, you look at them, they're not getting sober. And, you know, the next thing you know, they got 20 years and 10 years and they lead healthy, happy, useful lives. You know, I've seen so many people that have come in and, you know, we're prostitutes, we're drug addicts, we just got out of prison. All of the things that happen, right? And they go on this journey of taking these steps. They put new ingredients into their life. They do something today that their future self will thank them for. And voila, you plant this seed today for tomorrow. And you just keep planting today and again and again. And you're going to get a different result. And that was huge for me. But, you know, going down through the steps, you know, step three, decision. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to care of God as we understand Him? Yeah. Okay, it's just a decision. There's no action there. Right? But being willing to do that. Willing to say, is there a God, you know? Let me just hand it over to him. But what I learned was, you can't just sit there and say, God, help me move the mountain, right? You know, better duck, because the shovel's coming. He likes to work, you know. If you yelled at your father and said, hey, move the damn mountain, right? What's he going to do? He's going to throw the shovel at you, right? That's what the God of my understanding would do. He'd throw the shovel. So, okay, searching, fearless, or searching for, your moral inventory, step four, right? I found out what moral was. I had no idea what moral was. Moral is about being true, what's actually true. Searching through the lies in my head, the ones that were crippling me, the things that I learned, right, that were wrong, that weren't working. You know, I found out about ego, when my ego is up here and my self-esteem is down here, I'm not in reality at all. And the way I can tell is if I'm grateful for anything. If I'm not grateful for anything, I know my ego's way up and my self-esteem's low. But one of the things my sponsor taught me was service. I could not believe what this guy was doing. He'd go over and fix somebody's car and not charge him. See, if I did something for somebody else early in my sobriety, you owed me. Right? You owed me. I'm going to collect. I was always looking for a way to collect. Always looking for the scam. Trying to get something for nothing. That was a lie. That was something that did not serve me well, and I had no idea that that was a crippler. But it was. You know, giving an honest day's work for an honest day's pay. Who the hell ever thought that one of, you know? But it's true. That one. And you do it when nobody's looking. Oh my God, what? You're crazy, you know? I want to show it off and shine it. That's the crippler. And for me, that didn't work. That was one of the lies. And then in the moral inventory, I found out truths, more truths as we went through it. Now, on these steps, I went through the steps like four or five times with different sponsors because I was, like you say, I was unconstitutionally incapable of being honest with somebody else, right, or myself, right? And it took me a minute to get through them. But finally, when I got through them, about the fifth time, I found out I didn't need to do them again. I just do 10, 11, and 12. Those are the cleanup steps. But how much time do we have till? You started early. Oh, okay. I don't think I have that much time. But moral inventory, trying to find out what's true. And, and if you're new or nearly new, you might want to just, like, check out this sponsor guide. You know, success leaves clues. People with sponsors, they go to meetings. They have a power greater than themselves, or they're in search of one. You know, they show up, they make coffee. You know, they volunteer, they do service. They put together time. You know, my plan wasn't working. You know, my great plan for life, I ended up in psycho wards. Ah, what do you think? There's a genius. Okay, the other one was secrets. Yeah, going into step five, you know, admitted to God, to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs, my secrets. You know, I heard in the meeting, you're only as sick as your secrets. And I had a tough time letting that go. And, when I finally decided, yeah, I need some help with this one, you know. And then, you know, you kind of test the waters a little bit, and it was okay, you know. I'm going to be okay, you know. And I shared some of the things that were going on, the little stories that are running in my head, you know, the lies and the... that was one of the things, too, that I ended up in psycho wards because I had so many stories and alibis and trying to remember how this was going to cover this lie and that lie and what I borrowed here and stole here and covered this and this lie and that. That's how, you know, I had so much stuff going till I could clean that up. I wouldn't go anywhere else other than mental institutions. But, you know, I also had to put the alcohol and the drugs down, too, in which I did. But I had to be willing to do these steps to find out what was true, had to be able to be willing to share with another man, you know, these things, these stories, the lies and the garbage. And some of the stuff I didn't even know were lies. I believed them. You know, the delusions, you know, the denial. Oh, yeah, if I could, I should have would have done that. Oh, yeah, you know, I could have. Right? No, they're all lies. It's all gone. It's done. You know, ask God to remove the characters, the defect. You know, that was a tough one for me to do. But I just asked, you know, just help me be a better guy. You know, I want to be a better guy. That's what I want to strive to. I want to do, or I want to. Listen to that word. Do you hear that? I want to. You know, I am a better person today because of this program. Working the steps. I am. I do, and I am. I do service. Yeah, that works. And then you humbly ask Him to remove the shortcomings, right? And the humble part. It's just equal to. I don't have to grovel. What father wants to watch his son grovel or a daughter grovel? What the hell is that? Who made that one up, right? You know, the God guy that I understand, he doesn't want me to grovel. He just wants me to go, John's okay. Just be John. Just John. You don't have to be this. You know, that's how the father guy, you know, it's the one of our understanding. But I got to pick him. Right? I got a pretty cool one, but I got to pick him. He's a pretty neat guy, right? Okay. Humbly ask Him to remove his shortcomings. I have a part to do there. I have to work on my character defects. Honesty, selfishness, pride, ego. I'm responsible even for my self-esteem. I'm responsible. I don't give you control whether you like me or don't like me. I don't give you the keys to my happiness. I know what I do when nobody's looking is okay. It's okay. And that over a long period of time is okay, because there was times in my life that it wasn't okay. You know, what I did when you weren't looking was horrible. But today, I don't have to have those stories running in my head. You get it? By working these steps, working this simple little program, putting the different steps into my life, it actually works. Okay, I made a list, became willing to make amends. That didn't mean I had to run out and just go make amends to the whole wide world. The part was the willingness. Being willing, open-minded. You know, there was things to do. Some of the people that I went to go see, you know, you start off with the real safe ones first, right? You know, of course. And then they were like, what are you talking about? You know? Some of them I couldn't make amends to. And they're either dead or I didn't know who they were. You know, like I remember I went down this alley one night and there was a whole bunch of us living in this house. We didn't have any food. And I saw a deep freeze and I don't know what street I was on, but I just helped myself to the deep freeze, you know, and just, you know, the garage door is open and, you know, and I wanted to make amends, but I didn't know where to go. But there was this one guy, I went and he met me at the door of his shop and he says, we don't allow people like you in here. And it just crushed me. And I just smiled and I talked to my sponsor about it. And he says, that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. The part was that I was willing to walk through that door. That's part of the recovery. It doesn't matter what they do. That's their side of the street. You were willing to walk through the door. You know, it's like, good job. And they said, yeah, I don't have to think about that anymore. I don't have to look around the corner to see if he's looking for me or whatever. You know, I did my part. I did my part. Cleaned up my side of the street. And that was good. But being willing to actually do that, that was huge for me because I didn't want to do it. You know, didn't want to do it, but I didn't want to drink again. I was just tired of the alcohol and the drugs and all of the garbage going on. Yeah, and then there were some people that I hurt that would hurt them. I was actually married for a short period of time, had a couple of kids, and I had a daughter. Two boys and then I had a girlfriend, had a daughter during all the drug and alcohol crazes, right? And I messed all that up real bad. So I gave the boys up for adoption. And then I just paid child support on my daughter. But I never really had anything to do with my daughter, my oldest daughter. And That's... gave the boys up for adoption when they were, I think, 2 and 3. Now, you know, now they're way over 30 years old, you know, but I've seen my daughter a couple of times, and, you know, she's even a grandma now, which makes me a great grandpa. I don't know how the hell that happened, but so we have a pretty good relationship, but it's there was a lot of damage there, but she doesn't have any problem with it. She said, no, it's okay. You know, I know you were strung out on alcohol and drugs. I was no good to anybody during that period of time, nobody. And, continue to take personal inventory and prompt me to admit it when I'm wrong. Yeah, that's a hard one. Who wants to admit they're wrong, right? But you know what? I have to take an honest look at it, you know, and really check it out. Do the check and balance. Am I really in reality? Continue to take that inventory, and when you're wrong, promptly admit it. Not do it tomorrow or the next day. Do it now. And then sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understand Him. That was the thing with the kneeling and turning on the radio, being willing to do that. And then, you know, like I was telling Linda the other day, I have a lot of conversations. God, help me with this woman. Yeah, just help me. I can't help it. Anyways, but so having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, I promise you, if you're new or nearly new, these 12 steps is like making a cake. If you actually do it, you will have a spiritual awakening. Now, it doesn't mean you have arrived. I didn't know that, you know? It's the journey. The destination is actually in the journey of what we're doing. It's just the journey. You don't want to arrive, because then the party's over. This is a great party. This is a great party. There's great people. Wow, there's so many miracles. You know, this, it's physics. You do these to the best of your ability, you're going to have a spiritual awakening. And that doesn't mean that you're going to understand all about God and all of the... You're not going to understand all of it. It's an awakening. You're awakening this thing. You know? It's so hard to explain. When I first was learning about it, I thought about like a baby. A baby can't eat a steak. Do you know what I mean? They have to start off in a little mother's milk and a little Similac and soft bread. You know, you try to give a baby a steak, he's just going to choke. That's the same thing with religion. As an alcoholic and a baby in it, I just had to have little bits. I just had to be willing to go on there, willing to go learn, willing to humble myself, put myself equal with everybody else, get down on my knees and talk to something that I didn't understand. I just had to be willing to do that. And not only willing, but actually do it. When nobody was looking, that's the key. When nobody was looking, what was John doing? Half measures avail you nothing. If you, nothing changes, nothing changes. It's physics, I'm telling you. But when you change what you're doing, the results have to be different. If you don't want that chocolate cake, quit putting chocolate in it. You gotta put some lemon in there, or strawberry, and you gotta bake it at 350, you know, and it doesn't take 54 cups of salt, you know. As the alcoholic, I'm like, oh, more is better, 54 cups of salt, you know. No, you just put it, go follow the recipe. Follow this little program, and you will have a spiritual awakening. And then something happens, and then one day you're willing to actually go on this road and stay on the road. And and for that I'm grateful, and I'm grateful for everybody here. See this God guy? He's really funny, you know. There's like 50 people here, right? Or whatever, however many people, I don't know how many people's here, but you guys are all here to help me stay sober another day. And I'm here to help you stay sober just one more day. And together we can do a lot. And remember, if nothing changes, nothing changes. That's all, yeah. Thank you.
Okay, now you gotta give me a hug.
Oh.
And then. just had to get out of the way.
Yeah, and you got to get there.
I got to get something?
Yeah, you get it. We
give them a little gift.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah. Awesome, Johnny. Thank you very much.
Okay. Oh.
I didn't know it, but please bring the cards up to the front and help us clean up after the meeting. Thank you, John, again. Let's give him another hand. And let's circle the wagons and close the meeting with the serenity prayer.
Yeah, that's right.
Let me turn this thing off.